Alright, we are on.
Call to order, regular meeting, North Bend Planning Commission, Thursday, February 9th, 2012. Public comment on non-agenda items. You see some public, guessing it's not about a non-agenda item.
Well, I'm trying to figure out if it's an agenda item or not, and I don't want to be disrespectful, but I think it's not an agenda item.
Okay.
But it is.
Does it concern transportation?
Concerns the reason that it's done. And it has to do with trucks and tires and people and cars and things like that. So how about if I just give you a peek at it and tell me it's down? If for sure we're able to have comments during the transportation process, but network, we're not through the comments.
Mike, transportation element today, are we taking comment from the public during that comment?
I think we've tried to hold these as kind of more informal, open dialogue type of meetings. It's not a big crowd tonight, so.
Yep.
It's,
and I have a few comments on something specific to Mark and part of that.
Okay.
First of all, my name is Sherwood Corsion. I live at 137-1046 in First Place, Southeast North Bend, Washington. I spent a lot of time writing a document called The Chronicles of Past Closure, 16 years in its making. And recently I was out there and watching what was going on with the mindset of issues and solutions. It seems to me after all these years that I looked at all these issues and only got upset and compassionate. And recently, my colleagues and I have focused on the issue with the solution. But there's something going on at the 34 that doesn't really relate to this, but it relates to transportation. The Medicaid subsidies for all of you. What I noticed this year in that closure was that there was a significant number of trucks that were on 468 stopped down without the ability to proceed. I had more to do, but so I started interviewing the truckers. I had my camera and I had my little thing, and Ron saw me out there a few times. And
fortunately, I didn't get in front of the camera.
Well, I fixed the windshield for it. Oh, he stopped, and this big thing of ice slid down over his windshield, so I slid over in my Suburban and pulled it off, and it was run. What I found was that there are many, many, many trucks that get stranded in the corridor up there when there's ice and snow. And in talking with drivers, they said there's a law out on I-90 that's a $538 fine, which is the same category of fine as a negligent driving ticket, if we're not carrying adequate chains plus two, not normally something that's written up, but if there's an accident or if they're obstacle, if they're walking, the State Patrol will write them up. The point of embarkation is on page 3 here. It's at milepost 32 on the highway. And milepost 32 is prior to the exit 32. So from that point to 101 in Ellensburg, from November 1st to April 1st, all of which is in this package, there is a law, RCW and WAC, that says you must carry adequate chains for your driving tires, and that description is in here. It shows how many, what size truck, plus two, in the event one of them breaks. So my comment, and I don't know if this is the proper portal to bring it in, but I know y'all will find a way to put it somewhere, is that there's a way to solve a Gordian knot that
require chains on city streets.
Exactly.
Plus two.
If you codify, if you were to codify the, just like you did a couple of meetings ago, the speed limits, if you were to bring the codes together to be consistent with the WSDOT, then what would happen is, because these drivers were telling me, our dispatchers tell us to get off in North Bend because we don't carry enough chains. So we have become kind of like Cuba is to a drug dealer, and all, you know, the quality of life is a little less down there, but you don't go to prison. They pull off and they into the city of North Bend because we don't have a rule. We don't have a law or enforcement. I think it's important to take a look at that. It would untangle, I believe, a serious number of these trucks. This is on 468. The truck stops here, and these are guys are three wide coming up. So I don't know if this belongs in planning or where it goes, but it's a solution that's not visible to a problem that's extremely visible. And it doesn't take anything more than just matching up.
There's my job.
Good, that's 3 minutes. And here's the other thing. This is that study that the DNR is doing. I've only got 3 of these, so I'll make sure that you get one, Mike. That the comprehensive plan, recreational plan for the, there's about 38,000 acres of land that sets all around the city of North Bend. 24,000 acres of it is on the Middle Fork Road, and I thought it might be important to maybe infuse this into whatever kinds of studies you do, because the DNR is providing management, cleanup, security, all those kinds of things for an outdoor playground that would absolutely benefit the city of North Bend, because the city of North Bend is at ground zero. So that's enough.
Thank you. I've been cut off before.
Okay. The first this point. So these guys, just to understand, they're getting off and they're waiting to tell things to clear up, basically, so they can get back out because they don't have chains.
That second picture there, that's a little farther up, 468. Those two guys at the far reach on the back side of that photo, they've been sitting there for a day. And the guy on the lead said, I can't get down there for you because I can't get around the tube to down there by the storage deal. And he said, I don't carry chains. My dispatcher told me to pull off here and I'd be safe once I was off I-90, which was a common comment that these drivers made. Now, I wasn't being punitive about it. I was trying to figure out what's going on. What's going on is those trucks need a lot of chains to be able to get their wiggle room. You know, they can't just put on two. So, invisible solution.
Question, Ron or Sherwood, do you know if chains are available at the exit there at the truck can purchase?
They are available. And they're also, in one of these photographs, not these, but in the suite that I took, there's a guy with a big truck full of chains that's going around, but what it doesn't do is it doesn't resolve the issue of jamming up that driveway. I mean, it just, because when these guys get on an incline like that in that ice and snow, you would think they could just slowly pull out of it, but it doesn't happen. So.
Solution. Anyone else from the public wish to speak? Non-agenda items?
Oh, sure.
Hip Street. Then it's January 26th Planning Commission meeting. Do I have a motion to approve? Second. Any changes, adds, fixes? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Item 4, informational follow-up Planning Commission recommendations and council. Trucktown Transportation Issues Task Force. Mike, Ron?
Yeah. Ron, take that.
Chris?
Point to me.
Somebody?
actually, I'm going to cover it. Two issues that were covered by the council at the retreat a week and a half ago. First item was one of the recommendations from the Planning Commission on the transportation plan was that they wanted to see Fifth Street opened up between off to Orchard between New Side View and Old Side View or the in Metropolitan Park District area.
You mean to continue the city's philosophy of connectivity?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And this came as a specific Planning Commission recommendation?
I recall.
Okay, you were here. Okay.
So there was definitely one council member that was adamantly opposed to it. things. But there was no other commentary provided by the other council members. So there wasn't really much of a true decision made, per se. But you could tell that there was going to be some opposition to it. My recommendation is that we keep it listed on the recommended. I mean, the staff is in support of that recommendation. It's just that the council is not. And the council...
You say council
well,
is not.
A council member is not.
Thank you.
We'll have to see whether or not the council as a whole is accepting of that or not. So my recommendation would be to keep it on the list of projects and move it forward to the council and let them take the action if they want to take it off or not. So that's my commentary on that item. The second was in regard to the task force issue. The council sort of recognized the issues with truck movements and the truck issues in the truck town area. However, their feeling is that this is an issue that is of more regional nature than just the city's issue. And they don't necessarily want to take the lead on a regional basis, and therefore they're not inclined to fund the task force. However, again, I would still, if the Planning Commission would like the city to go in that direction, that they keep it on the recommended list or their list of recommended projects or funding or what have you, and again, let the council take the action of taking it off, what have you, because you are a voice of the community, and you need to at least let that be known to them, and again, let them take the action if they need to, but they are not inclined to fund the project or fund the task force. They're not opposed to a task force being formed, what have you, but no money actually being put forward.
I'd suggest to Commissioner that we take up both those strings within item number 5 on the transportation elements and say both of your recommendations. That's great to give you feedback from the council.
But we didn't spend a lot of time on the subjects.
One thing to add, though, is the council did want to take up the issue of the idling ordinance, and so they're going to set a workshop for February or March 6th.
I think it's been set in public. I already saw ESR on it.
Yeah, so this is that same notice. You want to pass that around for anybody that's interested to participate. So March 8th at a council meeting.
Can we ask questions?
Well, we've got nothing to do with their public hearing, so it's around that.
Well, no, I don't know about what you got to hand. Is there an attachment to it? I got that, but there was anything attached to it that you talked about.
That's the same as what was emailed out on the city's email distribution.
We're not having it. It's city council action on this.
Okay. Transportation element update. So Mike hired you suggesting we proceed through this since we've got a fairly lengthy, and it might surprise you not, I've got a few edits, so not many.
Well, Chris was going to provide a broad overview of more of the intent and purpose of what are in the edits to the element.
Okay.
And then I think we were going to open it up for discussion.
Okay. And now we're not looking to take action on this yet tonight.
No. No, we actually have a couple things still. We there are some policy edits that Chris had suggested that we didn't get into your packet last time because of a version control error, So we need to bring those policy suggestions back to you for your consideration at the next meeting. Then we'll need to hold the public hearing on March 8th. Following that, the Planning Commission can make a recommendation on it.
Okay.
Great. Chris, you want to
I guess I want to start out by just apologizing for the content that you got, because quite honestly, it's a mess. And I'd like to explain a little bit. What we tried to do with this transportation element was to essentially marry the changes on top of the document that you had before, which when we got it was not in a Word format. So when we tried to convert it to Word, there were a lot of embedded formats and everything else that were real problematic. And as soon as we started trying to put new content in with it to do track changes, it really, some of it worked, some didn't. But I was working through that on pretty short turnaround time, because we had a gap in our contract too. We ran out at the end of the year, so it was a little gap trying to get restarted. In any case, what you got was really only up through the chapter that led into the recommended action. So the real guts of the plan, I think, are really not there yet. And so I wanted to apologize for that right up front. But I think at the last meeting, we did talk through quite a bit of what those recommendations were and some of the framing for that. I'd like to go back and just kind of remind you a little bit about where we've been, and then try to set this up for a little more discussion about the content. And then I think there'll be less issue about how it's captured in the actual document. But so I want to talk, just quickly kind of review the scope, talk a bit about the traffic volume changes that have occurred over time, as well as what the implications are for that, and then refresh a little bit about the issues that have been identified and how, because that relates pretty directly to what the recommendations are, I think. And then to talk through the forecast for 2030 and what some of those key plan updates are, and then the next steps to finish the thing off. So this is a real brief summary of what our overall scope included. We've essentially had one public meeting. It was a public workshop for a kickoff. There's one more public meeting scheduled for March. It's a public hearing on the document. And we've pretty much satisfied the rest of the meetings with the Planning Commission. We've done the traffic counts, including truck classification counts that were done by Petite and also by the city. We've got some collision history, parking inventory, other stuff. The model was updated from the one that you had previously, converted to more current software, and then used to predict 2030 conditions based on your staff's land use projections. And I think this is a kind of an important point relative to where you were with your last plan. And I think this related to quite a bit of the messy deletions in your last version, because you had three different land use alternatives and a whole range of different deficiencies and alternatives and analyzed to go with three different alternatives. So that is a lot more simple, and it should have been easier than it was. But this is really where we are now, is trying to flag those recommendations. The city staff really has generated the cost estimates, so we're in good shape on those, I think. And lastly, we kind of need to then come up with project priorities relative to your funding availability and what financial options there might be for getting future grants. That's really kind of the work to be done here, to collaborate with Ron on getting that set up. And then we still have a SEPA checklist to generate as soon as we've got this draft document assembled, and that will help support the
review with surrounding jurisdictions, submitted to Puget Regional Council for approval, that type of stuff.
Chris, so, before you go, yeah. Could you just comment, or your comments focused, essentially three chapters in your the element of it, well, actually, three chapters. So what our focus for some time has been mostly around the policies and focus and such. The bulk of your work is really everything that comes beyond.
Well, I did quite a bit of input on the policies as well, and I was a little disappointed that they didn't get in there. Part of what happened was I submitted some suggestions, and then your staff assembled and did more changes, and mine apparently didn't get integrated. And then after
oversight, not rejected.
It's coming back to the point.
Yeah, it's really, just a matter of getting it merged. And partly the input that I was offering was to try to add more language that would be more likely to help you get your plan approved by Puget Sound Regional Council to make sure that you're acknowledging greenhouse gas emissions, multimodality, level of service for other modes, stuff like that, that I have to admit I haven't had a lot of experience with getting plants through their checklist since Vision 2040 was published. So that's really, I think, your objective. Agreed. I think the plan and policy framing is more important for you as going forward to make sure that you've got solid guidance to make decisions about conflicting issues in the future. And I'm not going to argue about wordsmithing those. I think you can take or leave as much as I offer. So, agreed. I think the end of this chart really is kind of where I've left off and where I think we need to focus the most to make sure the content is good. So I just wanted to refresh in terms of traffic volumes, and this is really a measure of what's already out there. And probably the most pertinent part of this is the pie charts. On the right side there, you see the pie chart for essentially the classification count on 468th between the freeway ramps and North Bend Way, where about 41% of the volume is trucks, and not just trucks, but heavy trucks. The vast majority of them are five axles or more. So it's very different than most other places. The other interchanges, the worst case is, I think, less than 10% at Bendigo. So that is a very different animal there, and I just wanted to acknowledge that going forward.
Are there recognized definitions for heavy truck?
Well, the counts that we did essentially counted all vehicles from bicycles up to more than five axles, by number of axles. So we've got a detailed breakdown, and after we did ours, the city went out and repeated those for longer time periods and has even more than 24-hour periods. So.
I get that. I've been struggling as I read the document and trying to distinguish, we'll use the word truck. I think, in general, we're all referring to semi-truck, but I don't know that there's any known definition to a semi-truck, right?
There are smaller trucks than the semi-trucks.
Yes, right. Yes, well, that's my point. And so
trucks could be, I think generally, though, trucks are they could be two-axle, or they could be three-axle, or five, but it's identified in the counters by separation, the distance between the axles.
Well, even more than how that truck is counted, I'm thinking of what would be industry accepted definitions for certain classifications of trucks. Is it by weight? Is it by axle? What have you? But when we're looking at and we're considering things like ordinances or when we're making recommendations to council around diesel exhaust or exhaust fumes and what we're looking to perhaps have regulated.
One example is this chain requirement that Sherwood provided requires chains for vehicles over 10,000 pounds gross vehicle weight. So that may be a common threshold.
And that weight is cited in this element in at least one spot.
Do we need to find them then?
My question was really around are there industry, you guys are the professionals in the industry, are there industry
I don't think you want to constrain, you don't want to constrain the delivery vehicles because, you know, now with people working out of their homes, you know, you've got to have FedEx trucks going.
I'm not asking about constraining. I'm not asking about how it might be applied. I'm purely asking, do we have definitions that we would be able to use a term with an understood definition to be able to distinguish among them?
It all depends upon what issue you're addressing. If you're just talking about trucks in general, then you can include delivery trucks and stuff like that. If you're talking about,
you're saying difference between a road impact to the road versus environment. So
well, I think for a truck, let's just say the city was going to enact a truck route ordinance and you were going to restrict trucks to truck routes. Typically, that would include all your major, minor arterials, and may include your tractors, depending on whether you go that way or not. But I think there,
it would probably be based on gross vehicle weight.
Yeah, then you would want to define it
because of the wear and tear on the street.
Right.
You know, the heavier the truck, the more wear and tear. So you want to restrict it by the weight.
Right.
That seems to me it would be the
not necessarily to solve now. If you had the easy one, you went, yeah, of course, Rob, it's okay. Thank you.
So then,
now under what was done here for the counts, you have heavy truck versus car volume. So how are we defining these in this case?
Well, you know, before
that might help to clarify too.
Well, of the 41% there that is heavy trucks, they are almost all five axles. There were some three axle trucks and, you know, some with multiple, like two axles with six wheels or whatever, but the vast majority of the volume at that interchange is five axles.
What's at that intersection? I'm saying, what do these counts here that you're taking apply to?
I think
they
were all more than three.
What was your definition of separated truck from other? Right. Okay.
So the other, in any case, I wanted to just make a point that there were quite a lot of counts taken between, I think we did 16. And then the city did additional counts on top of that. You probably get another dozen or so yourself. So there's quite a good cross-section of volumes that were taken. And I also wanted to just revisit the historical numbers, because this bears on the expectations, I think, about what congestion occurs and what the traffic is like. And also it relates to studies that have been done previously that are part of your legacy of studies that have been done around the city. And what we see here, when we compare 2011 counts to 2003 or 2006, is that they're pretty routinely lower, and not just a little bit, fairly significantly lower. And
Everyone that's common here is lower.
Everyone is lower. Some are less low than others. But I think it's important to acknowledge, I think there's a certain expectation that people have that traffic is always getting worse. And that's not true. Because I think our economy has changed, our society has changed, the environmental awareness has changed. There's a lot of things that are happening. And it'd be hard to say exactly what's causing this. It's not the price of gas alone. You know, I mean, there's probably a lot of different things. But the trend has been, over time, downward. And not that we're projecting that to continue, because your land use is going to change. And so there is increase that is forecast. But I just want to manage expectations, because it's typical when we transportation planners do a traffic study for a land development or whatever, oftentimes we'll look at a history and say, okay, the background traffic has been changing at X percent a year, so we'll add that, you know, and accumulate it over time. So that can make a big difference if you're looking 10 plus years in the future, if you're assuming an aggregated increase.
Or also in modeling efforts, there's always this tendency to say, well, background traffic from areas outside the study area are going to increase by 1.5% per year. Well, obviously, if we use this as background traffic to Snoqualmie, it doesn't work. You know? So yeah, it can get a negative impact on Snoqualmie as opposed to a positive impact. So,
Anyway, this is kind of important framing. I didn't want to
help me. Help me with your math. 8,600 trucks passing through.
No, that's all traffic. That's total.
All traffic. 8,600. Looking at the bottom line.
Yeah.
8,600 in 2006, 2011, 4,600. You're saying it's only a drop of 11%.
No, I'm sorry. That is an average. You know, if we take the 5 years between 2006 and 2011, that would be the annual average change.
That's why I'm missing it.
Yeah, so if you take that 11.5% times 5,
it's dropping dramatically.
It's fairly dramatic.
Okay.
It would be nice if we had traffic counts every year to see, you know, if maybe it was just a sudden dip just now or what, but we don't have the numbers. So.
Well, you know, I was at the city of Bellevue for 8 years, and while I was there, I was responsible for doing their concurrency updates and other stuff, and I had to do annual reports on how traffic was changing over time. I started there in 1999, and I was there through 2008. And I started there at the peak of the boom, and the annual reports were, you know, just sort of like this, flat to declining almost every year during that whole period. So this is really at least a regional, maybe a national trend, I think. So in any case, it's a little different. I mean, transportation planning has got a long history, and there haven't been that many periods in time probably where we've seen this kind of result. I want to summarize the identified issues, and there are kind of three different groups by color here. The purple ones were ones that were identified in the June workshop with the Planning Commission, and I think that the suggested projects that we're dealing with are pretty closely aligned with all those issues that were identified in purple. And the ones that are in gray are the city's existing TIP projects. So those are, you know, acknowledged projects haven't been built yet. They're still out there that you're going to have to commit resources to. And then the ones in red are the deficiencies that came out of the long-range projections and the previous studies that have been done, particularly in the Trucktown area, about, you know, deficiencies related to growth, and particularly in truck mode. So, I just wanted to kind of put those together, because I think that the project recommendations align pretty well with those kinds of inputs. And I just wanted to hit on those fairly briefly. This, I think I showed this to you in November, and this was on the weekend, and it essentially shows the backup from the North Bend and Bendigo intersection for the southbound traffic. And, you know, while I was there, I watched a half a dozen cars and trucks turning around the diverter to escape that queue. So, you know, for a weekend, I was a little surprised to see that much problem. This is another intersection where I know you're already identified a candidate project, and looking at the turning movements there, I really feel like it's an opportunity, I think, to improve the situation for safety and for pedestrians and everything else. So it's really that movement from the one that seemed most problematic to me was from northbound Park to try and go across North Bend Way to get into the QFC, and similarly to get out to do the same kind of thing. And Downing, of course, now is punched through and it's right next to this. So there really is an opportunity, I think, to rationalize those movements in a safer way. One thing that I have to say I was surprised about is that it didn't look like there's very much accident experience there. So as conflict laden as it looks, people are apparently being pretty careful when they do that.
Ron, since Gannon's been there, has there been any accidents? Because it just seems, I've seen a couple times where you're so ingrained in not having Gannon on the other side when you pull up to that intersection, the new connection that those folks often get, or I've even been coming out of there, and you kind of get ignored. Has there been any issues yet?
There might be some sight distance related to that, too, because you have that big building right next to it.
Well, it's more the people straight across from you.
Oh.
Like, they come right up, and they're looking on the right way, not straight across to see, like, there's been anyway.
And I think the reason why you're not seeing a lot of accidents is that, you know, we've got a low speed limit in the downtown area. So, people are able to react enough in time.
Superior drivers.
Sorry?
They're superior drivers.
That's right, yes.
Then this too is just to the west of that where I took that last photo. I think there's clearly some sidewalk barriers here that I know you're aware of, and you're going to have to try to work to get those removed as part of your plaza plan or whatever you can do. And this is the same type of problem where you've got inadequate sidewalk clearance across the bridge here, and this is really a WashDOT facility, so there's opportunity maybe to get WashDOT to invest in an improvement there. And then, of course, we had Southeast 146, where you've got the evidence of a lot of heavy loading on that roadway, and a number of mitigations that have already been identified from the previous studies in that area for signalization at the intersection of 468th, also on the other side of the freeway at the ramps, at the eastbound I-90 ramp. And then essentially the developer there is on the hook to kind of monitor those conditions and has already contributed to the cost of one of those signal installations. The downtown plaza, I think, is a pretty important development relative to change compared to your last plan in that this could really relate pretty strategically to addressing some of the other problems that you've identified. If you look at it from the perspective that you really want to slow down traffic through the downtown, encourage a more complete grid and opportunities for traffic to go around this area, that's kind of the framing for part of what we model when we looked at 2030, and it did have some significant advantages. So in the no action situation, of course, the intersection at Bendigo and North Bend Way you see is red. That came out LOSF. And the ramp terminals down at 436th, yeah, I'm sorry. The ramp terminals also showed up as D in the future, and I think that reflects increased residential growth down in that southern part of the city, north of the freeway, and obviously the access to the freeway is
what is it currently?
Important for that. That actually, that's mostly just general traffic.
No, I mean, what's its current rate?
It's probably A or B. I think okay. I've got that someplace.
So it's
pretty good shape.
Okay.
So, and then also the roundabout at North Bend Way and Cedar Falls drops to about a D, and yet I'm not sure there's much you can do about that, but that's a forecast condition. And then, of course, there are minor approach situations on intersections that still show as a C or better that still have some significant delays, but the overall average LOS is still okay. When we look at making, I'm sorry, you want me to go back?
No, that's fine. I just, what's this point?
Now that's Park.
Okay.
That's Park. And if, when we go to a situation with improvements, now this assumes that you would implement the plaza, downtown plaza plan, and that you would complete connectivity. I've got a pointer in my briefcase, but I forgot to get it out. But assumes that you've complete this connection, the casino bypass, assumes a connection extension from Pickett, and in particular those two improvements. Also that you've got Downing in here already. It doesn't show on this base map, but that's there.
Is it all of the improvements on this or some subset?
It's just these major connections. It's not the whole project list. But I think the main point of that is that if there's really an imposed kind of capacity and speed constriction in the downtown along with these other connections, you end up with about 500 trips that per hour in the peak that would use this new connection, another couple hundred over here. And those things help as far down as here. What you see is a couple hundred, if we look back at the last one, a couple hundred trips that were coming down here actually go up the other way because they've got destinations up here. Instead of going around the freeway, you know, they'll go this way. So there's that, and then this brings enough traffic around this intersection here that this intersection comes out of the F without having to do major improvement.
Everything there makes sense to me except the improvement for the exit 32 interchange. I'm not getting how that would. What's diverting?
Well, I think that the issue down here is that they're essentially stop-controlled intersections, and the traffic on the through street has a right-of-way. So traffic coming out the ramp has to wait and has difficulty getting out. If you take a couple hundred vehicles off the through route, then you've got more gaps and there's more opportunity for that traffic.
That, but what would be the improvement that would divert traffic away from that one?
Well, it's connections up here. And up here, that there's enough traffic that switches to alternate routes that you see this goes up a little more here, and so it's a reduction on the main route. So there, anyway, that's one of the.
I have a question. I think you pointed to the line 480, and I'm just wondering if that is the Southport extension, because I thought that says 202 to North Bend Way, and that doesn't look like it's coming from 202. It looks like it's North Bend Way to Bendigo, or 202.
Okay. 202 is Bendigo.
So no, it doesn't connect 202 before you get into downtown. that's what I wasn't sure where it would connect to. I was thinking you could take off traffic, more traffic from Bendigo as kind of a roundabout to the city, that one exit there.
So you're...
Am I making any sense? So in other words, if there was any way that we could go... My turn.
So I don't know if there's any way that we can actually connect this way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know land-wise, but if that made any sense. So that way,
we're coming from connection here. From along Meadowbrook Drive, or whatever it is. And then, of course,
The thing is that you've got this.
You got that there.
It's really an acute angle. So the intersections are going to be problematic. Ron and I did talk about whether there was that opportunity to straighten that out, and
for one thing,
environmental consequences.
You've got the Tollgate Farm, which is dedicated open space, so you can't go through that. And then south of that, south of 8th Street, you've got some private property you'd have to buy out, but it's all floodplain too. So, and you got Ryberry Creek going through there, and other things that would be
the connection. Yeah, the connection already exists. It's just not a great connection because of the angles.
Right.
There's two connections, right? There's another one to the west that comes out by the railroad. Yard or something like that. To the west of where that connects.
This way?
I think you're talking about this one, aren't you? It runs down past the new railroad.
It comes out by the high school, I think.
Oh, you mean
Stone Quarry Road.
Meadow Bulge.
No, Stone Quarry Road.
High school is Bulge.
And are you talking
about... Stone Quarry Road is the one that stays on the west side of 202.
Yeah.
You mean, Scott, it goes out past the golf course? Down.
No, sorry, it's okay.
I mean, is this right here, I think?
That is what...
That's all
that.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, that's 14th. It doesn't go all the way through. It's a cul-de-sac at the end.
So there's... I'm thinking of something...
Off of 202.
Are you thinking between Bulge and 202?
Maybe I'm not looking at that. It must be up further.
I think it is.
And it comes in right before the light.
It's Stone Quarry.
Yeah, that's Stone Quarry Road.
Okay, yeah, that's the one I was thinking of more. Okay, yeah. And so you could almost... Yeah.
I guess that would be the route I would think of when trying to go that way. I have one other question on just with the nice jargon I've modeled a few of these intersections here as well. And the 202 North Bend Way has D in existing, but I mean, you have pictures that show the queues, and we've all sat through several cycles, and I know it operates at F now. So, I mean, you can only count however many cars can go through an intersection.
There's a way of getting rid of the queues. That's getting rid of the parking.
Right.
But
that
unfortunately is a tough pill to swallow for a lot of the commercial development along there. They like to park in front of, have their customers park in front of their stuff. And
not much point in having commercial areas you can't go to the store.
Yeah.
Well, once we get to our floodplain, we can just say to elevate all the buildings and create parking.
Well, not so much. And even that solution, you're only losing six or eight stalls, so it's not like taking out the whole street parking.
Well, we had that, or have that in our 6-year TIP, but council has not wanted to move in that direction.
Is the casino cut off, is that the main impact for why LOS would improve at the downtown light?
Yes, I think it's a significant part of it because,
that would have to be catching traffic coming east, 202 as
right,
well.
There's,
and then there's the arterial turn where 202 meets with 4th, so the improvements there probably funnel a lot of traffic.
Well, one of the difficulties is that you've got a shared through and left lane, So anybody who wants to go left, even if you only have one vehicle trying to go left on North Bend Way northbound, then they're going to block the through movement. And the same thing for the southbound, right? You've got to combine left and through.
Or the eastbound.
So
in either way, when you're approaching the intersection of Bendigo and North Bend Way for any turn movements, you have a single lane sharing of two turn movements. And by putting the bypass in there, you reduce the volume of traffic on those two legs, allowing for more time to be distributed to the other legs and clear them out.
Gotcha.
The other thing that helps is that we did assume that you could make full movements at Bendigo and Forth. And that allows people that do want to go east coming from Bendigo, gives them a chance to find an alternate path. So then functional classification, some of the key, this is different than the graphic that I showed you last time, I believe, and the one that ended up in your document is the wrong one. This essentially shows both existing and recommended functional classification on the same graphic. So if the dashed lines are the recommended additions or changes, and of course this includes this casino bypass, includes the picket extension, some future routes that, I guess this one in particular, that are pretty long range and probably developer driven, but it would be an opportunity to get them on a plan so that you can reserve right away and have them delivered at a future date. Any connectivity in the grid, I think, that you can provide now would save you trouble later. And of course, we're identifying recommendations for this area that essentially was annexed where you didn't really have a recommended class or an existing classification before. So,
is it possible just to classify those now instead of having a recommendation for something?
It has to go through the approved comp plan process before we can reclassify it.
But this is the comp plan.
When you have to actually have it,
it has to be finally approved before we can make the change, though.
Yeah. Well, and this is what sets the direction for the future of a classification. But I'm just suggesting, instead of calling it suggested, have the comp plan just say this is the classification, and we make the classification consistent.
Well, I mean, essentially it's another graphic, but you need to run it through the Puget Sound Regional Council and the state DOT, and you're going to have to show existing and new and essentially approve the list of changes. So that's
something. Minor picky point, is there any better name for the bypass than the casino bypass?
We've referred to it as the South Fork Extension.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking I saw it, all right, South Fork Extension seems more appropriate to me. But
that's kind of where I started out, but it was listed in your current TIP as the casino bypass. So I
Ron will accept that modification, won't you, Ron?
Oh, yeah.
South Fork bypass.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Okay.
We're making that transition.
I think the other question that, you know, I think maybe this has more to do with what kind of conceptual engineering you come up with for this thing, but the intersection at 8th, I think, is potentially important too, and this could be essentially an extension of 8th, you know, from that intersection. And that the intersection of both at North Bend Way and up at Bendigo, if it's going to attract any volume, I think the intersections need to have some attention too, to make sure that you've got appropriate site distance and approach angles so that you don't end up with a safety problem.
Chris, I'm looking at page 23 in our book, and it's the roadway functional classification existing and proposed. And what I show is that on North Bend Way from 436th Avenue Southeast to, I guess, is that the 400.8 Avenue Southeast is proposed as a collector, but to the east of that, it's a proposed minor arterial. And I'm wondering, why wouldn't they be the same?
Well, so that kind of goes back to...
Zero is in on what we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So you're talking about this section down here being minor arterial, which is what it's recommended here, and then it was a collector from here up, right?
Uh-huh.
And the reason for that was, we talked about this a little bit at the last meeting, and I think that reflects what might happen in the very long range after you implement the plaza project in the downtown, where you wouldn't be able really to put trucks on North Bend Way with the idea that they're going to go all the way to Bendigo. But Ron made the point then that if we show that now, you're not going to be able to attract any federal or state dollars to projects along North Bend Way, including at Downing Park or others. And it makes more sense probably to stick with something closer to your existing classification until you get the projects built that you want, and then you can downgrade them any way you want. But I think this version essentially assumes that you maintain this as a major arterial down to the freeway, so you'd have a loop from the freeway all the way up through town, and then it becomes a collector for the, I'm sorry, a minor arterial for the lower end.
Okay. So it's currently a major arterial.
Right.
Okay, it just showed all yellow, so I didn't understand that. Okay. And then my question is, so from the east part of town as a very connected point, I'm looking at this going, if I go North Bend Way, make a right on 428, then I can make a left somewhere and end up on Highway 202, and I get around downtown
Plaza.
Mean
come up here?
Yeah.
And
So that's where I'm seeing some kind of a connectivity throughput to go around and relieve some of that Main Street backup. Does that make sense?
Yes, I would agree. It's in, right now there's kind of a lack of connectivity on this eastern area, and there's better pedestrian bike facilities through there than if you're in a car. You have to go further around than if you're walking or driving.
Mike, listen to the development that's going on in that area. What's the major roadways, the connection points?
So you're talking about right here around Tourism Park.
Well. Just to the east.
Just to the east. This is the plat from John Day Homes, the Ranger Station Cottages. They've got preliminary plat approval, but they haven't moved forward with the final plat. This would be the Byron Moore subdivision.
Right.
And they're still...
What are the connection points?
So they'd be connecting... The Byron Moore subdivision would be providing a portion of this connection, not this down here. This would be subject to development of this property here, or have the name of the old E.F. Evans site.
Right.
What are the connections? So the Byron Moore subdivision would connect out via 3rd and Pickett,
as well
and then as well as up on 4th, is that?
Yeah, 4th or 6th.
4th. 4th there. So what you were talking about was connecting, or I think Gary was talking about connecting somehow via along the trail here.
Yeah, and I wouldn't know where about would be the best proposal to make that. I'm just thinking of some way that gives some relief to North Bend Way and Bendigo from the east side. So if you're going to the park,
other than wiping out the trail, your only other opportunity is in connection with the new subdivision and through Silver Creek.
Unless you go all the way down to what is that one? 108th.
Is there an opportunity to parallel the trail?
You have to go through school property, park property.
You'd have to lose
the
ball fields.
On the other side, it's already fully developed.
Yep.
So really, the opportunity doesn't really exist for putting my street through.
Whatever the street is to the south of Southeast 108, is that something that we can't improve water.
You're talking around here.
Yep.
That's 6th Street, right?
And then the one
through
above.
The existing neighborhood. Yeah. This is existing residential.
They're, they're touch and go as collectors, I would say. I mean, they're more residential character.
They're more residential character, yeah.
I personally would care
if the Byron Moore subdivision goes through it, it basically sort of finishes the grid system in that area for residential. So the only way to get around is through Pickett Avenue.
How many homesteads up here?
It was roughly 100 and, it's been a long time, I think about 104.
100 plus in the John Day cottage?
That was 60-some.
So 160 homes and really one new connection.
There's turn lanes that are being put in with one of those? On the North Bend Way, is that right? Is there a turn lane?
Were those, developments in the 30?
Was there traffic?
Yeah, those were provided in that. So it does ultimately provide an additional connection because you can then go up Pickett, 3rd, and then up to 4th, which isn't a connection point that exists now.
As development,
it's not very efficient.
Not a great one, but it's
real wide, so they provide the left turn lane. But right now there's nothing there. But yeah, eventually it will be developed as a 3-lane road through there with the center left turn lane.
So with the connection of Pickett and another connection here, it has 2, 3, 4, like at least 4 different ways to get north and south there. It's maybe more ideal to have even a more mature grid than that, but it looks like it could work okay through 23rd. So in any case, let me move along. So on the trails and bikes, your current adopted network is really quite good. And one of the things I tried to emphasize in the write-up that I did was that you really have a very viable network already, particularly with the fact that you've got the Snoqualmie Valley Trail that really goes through an important part of the community already, so that the connections to that trail allow most neighborhoods to have really good access to recreational opportunities pretty close to home. And between that and the other connections, it can be a really robust system that I think would be very much in keeping with the way you're positioning yourselves as a very recreational rich kind of community. The additions that I was suggesting are, one that I think is pretty important is that you currently have essentially a wide striped shoulder now that goes from North Bend Way all the way down to the river. It's not signed as a bike route, but it essentially is there to serve that function now. And with some designation and stenciling, it can be potentially a really important part of that network. And also on 424th, that too, of course, would serve this growing area down here and provide an important connection. And then Ballarat or Downing over in this area would provide another north-south connection on the eastern side of the downtown.
Ron, do we have striping for bike routes on our TIP list?
No.
We don't. It seems like that would be a very minor cost thing, but could get a lot of benefit.
Sure, we can put it in.
A question on, do we have an existing bike route on the Bend Way that goes up to basically an outside road on the berm? often see people walking on the road because they don't realize that that grass is actually a trail. Is there anything we have, is there designation or something to like make it look like it's actually a trail? Because people think they're walking on private property or something. They're walking on the side of the road. It's like you've got this great piece of grass that's all along the North Bend Way. And it's just
not
like,
officially a trail.
It's not officially. Right? Aren't we have it on there as a
future acquisition? It's probably what you're talking about, right, Ron? That's the railroad right of way.
Railroad right of way. We keep it mowed so that people can use it.
Oh, because we have it labeled as an off street trail, so we should probably.
Well, yeah, but.
Okay, so but we can't officially like carve it out and put some nice ground.
Right,
right.
We're trying to get there by buying the right of way, but having a little trouble trying to get money to do an appraisal so that we can then take it to some funding agencies to get money to buy the trail. So I keep hounding the council for a little money to do an appraisal. I can get half off on the appraisal because I'm using grant money for the other half. So,
what's the magnitude of that cost?
I imagine appraisal. How much are appraisals? $10,000, $20,000.
How long is the stretch?
Sorry?
Is that a couple of miles?
Yeah.
That can't be that much.
We've already done it for the LID, so using some of that data already shouldn't be very much to do.
$3,500 to get it stamped and efficient, about $2,500 to figure it out.
Can you go back to the last slide? Can you go back to the last slide?
So anyway, we're trying to get there.
Yeah. I think that would be a great.
John Bay also submitted a comment via email. He suggested that we designate a trail route that would come across the back of the Tanner Pit property, the back of Tannerwood, and then up the Sagali property to connect back to the river area, which might be a good addition as well.
Is there a trail requirement associated with the Tannerwood?
Yes. Yeah, as part of their second phase, they'll be dedicating a corridor there for a trail.
So this would be part of what you suggested, or are you saying that's the connection that would go with his requirement?
It's his requirement. It would be a smaller portion of the larger corridor that would extend across some other properties to be developed as well.
Yeah, I think extending that trail along the edge of the river, that's really a great thing to have if you can get it connected all the way through.
Do we need to do anything
formally on that? The Planning Commission could recommend that be added to the plan.
Didn't the Parks Commission look at that and make some recommendation along the lines of routing? I mean, I don't want us to just make a motion. I mean, we need to see a routing.
We had considered the wildlife corridor in that area, and we had originally thought the wildlife corridor could serve as kind of trail corridor as well. So we do have a suggested route that could go along those original lines. So the update to this trail map would go in tandem with an update to the trail plan map and the park zone as well.
I think another update to your current trail system map is I think there are some routes that were identified on there as proposed that have since been built. So, it might be worthwhile just to do an update so that.
Yeah. And we could bring that forward at the same time as this since the comp plan is open.
Okay. So, some of the updates that I just wanted to just hit the high points, you may have noticed in the markup. I was suggesting that the chapters be reordered because there were a couple chapters that weren't called chapters, including the goals and policies and the introduction. And then I really felt like the introduction needed to be in the front and the goals and policies to follow. And then, it kind of changes the order a little bit, but I didn't want to just do that. But that would be a recommendation that we reorganize it that way. Many of the changes that I was trying to suggest really are to respond to Puget Sound Regional Council Vision 2040 things and state changes, state legislation that has happened since the last plan. Then also, of course, to reflect the community input you've had to address the new annexation areas and then to incorporate your new downtown plaza vision. So the next steps here really are rapidly, need to be rapidly delivered here. So the draft plan and the SEPA checklist really have to be done like within the next week. This public hearing would happen on or about March 8th, is that right? That would be triggered by the review period on the SEPA checklist, so it's a 21-day notice.
15-day notice.
Pardon?
15-day notice. But we're trying to do it so that the SEPA 15-day comment period aligns with the time frame for the hearing as well, so it all concludes at the same time.
Okay. So this is the schedule, and if we can talk about that.
Well, that's an hour, 40-minute overview. Thanks. Not like we ask any questions so quickly. Commission, where you want to go? Do you want to get some feedback? I did a lot of reading and had some, a variety of edits, but I have a feeling that quite a number of them align with the changes you already anticipated, because I found numbering that was off, chapter out of order, that kind of stuff. So it sounds like that.
Yeah, I think that's...
Maybe as a suggestion, if it's just grammatical type of things or numbering, formatting, if you want to email those to us, we'll get those all to Chris, and that way we don't have to spend the meeting time looking at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a place to start. Suggestions. So there's kind of two directions that I want. Do I understand this? This is the cover to the report, not the cover of the plan, right? I wanted to say, so there's two areas that I want to talk about. One is the what's in the TIP, and then some of the things I saw in the chapter. When I read the opening of the goals and objectives section, one thing I would say is I think it's really overall very well written. And I did the same comment to chapter one introduction. And from my perspective, it basically the statement is read, it's very concise, it's very informative, it gives you a great layout of where it's going. That said, I'm making a couple of suggested edits. I didn't print out, and I meant to ask you to make a few copies of this, Mike, but I'll just give to you guys, because I think since we're going to look at it again next week, this is no substantive change, and I'll pass my copy around, but basically just a little bit of reordering in the opening, and I'm on what's now titled Chapter 2, Goals, Objectives, and Policies, which I'm presuming will be Chapter 2, is your proposal, right? Yeah.
Yes.
It felt to me, I referenced page 11 in the document, which actually talks about what the goals and policies section is, as well as just reading the opening, and so... It just seemed to me needed to say the purpose of the goals, objectives, and policies chapter of the transportation element is. Right? So I gave you a suggested edit on that. And I won't, since we'll look at it again, I won't spend any time on it. Third paragraph, I am suggesting a little bit of a reordering to get to the idea that, when we do our best to create the policies, then when you start applying them and you hit the conflicts, what are you going to do about it? Well, first thing we're saying is, hey, first, the utmost importance is to apply them consistently. So then when the conflicts arise, and with the advice of staff, council needs to make their decision and recommendation. So I just reordered a little bit of that third paragraph. So you've got those comments. And then in that opening, the only other one that I would wondered about was what is the second page, Romans 8. It's a bulleted list of what, you know, the main goal one, goal two. It just seemed to me that ought to read goal one, goal two, but, you know, that you understood that that's what the order is and that it dies into the various pieces. Anybody else have anything they want to say about this first couple of things?
So you're suggesting put goal one and then...
Yeah, I'm just saying eliminate the bullet and say, you know, goal one, streets and highways, goal two, environmental quality, three, pedestrians, etc. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed to me to make sense. Page 11 is the first one that I have a substantive comment on. So goal two, implement transportation improvements, minimizing adverse impacts, natural environment, public health, air quality, water quality, energy consumption. When I read the objective, the first objective there, it's talking about federal and state air quality requirements. With that in mind, and as I looked at objective 2.2, reduce adverse environmental health impacts. So I'm looking at those two objectives. Everybody with me? Mm-hmm. Then I looked at policy statement P215, which is the last one under the first objective, mm-hmm. which says implement an idling policy is the opening. Feels to me like that one belongs in the next piece.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
So I just suggest that P2.1.5 actually become the first policy under objective 2.2. And then I would make one suggestion on the wording of that to read implement an idling policy for all city vehicles versus with all city vehicles. For myself, as it goes into the rest of the policy statements under Objective 2.2, I personally think the wording in a variety of those needs additional work, but I did not have time to really wrap my head around it to come with any solid proposals on that. But there was just, and that kind of frankly went a little bit to my questions around like truck, what's the definition of a truck, and some things like that. But there's just some use of some words in there that left me a little unclear that were really speaking to what we're trying to get at. So certainly I will plan to spend some time with that section.
Point of order, because I know at the last meeting we actually just passed this section. We can go back and make changes to it throughout the public hearing process.
Right? Absolutely. Okay. Right to the time we voted out of here, we can make changes.
And again, we will be bringing back to you some edits that were suggested by Chris that didn't get into your last version.
To Mike's point, an awful lot of things that I had in others were things around punctuation and stuff like that. I don't want to burden us with that kind of stuff tonight. In fact, I'd probably just wait to see the next version because I think it'll be a lot cleaner.
Mike, did you do spell check?
I don't think I found a spelling error. It's more punctuation. Okay. All right. I have my own punctuation system. And I'm going to keep talking until somebody speaks up and says they're coming. So I moved on to page 15, Romans 15, goal 4. Goal 4 opens the public transportation system shall provide alternatives. That didn't feel right as a goal statement. Should it be should?
Yeah.
And likewise, objective 4.1 says public transportation shall be provided by King County Metro. I didn't really think we had the ability to demand that of them. So Yeah, I'd say should. Page 16, goal 5. I support the idea here, the concept of the streetscape as through development or redevelopment to enhance. I wasn't sure how that was intended to help preserve our historic downtown. Preservation to me is speaking to the hardscape. And so it's more of a question, and I wasn't sure that preserve historic downtown applied in this particular
instance.
Might be to enhance the historic downtown. I thought, one of the things I think we're trying to do here is to enhance the aesthetic value overall. So if you would play with that wording a little bit. Policies, and I'm done. Yes, I can stuff deeper into the document.
You can address any edits to the rest of them, and then I'll send you the policy.
Chapter one.
Your additions and modifications stuff.
Okay.
So then we can work it all in the same.
Anyone want to speak to anything before chapter one?
All right, so it would be the fourth paragraph down, and the first sentence, second line, we only mentioned exit 31. I think now the city expands to exit 32 and 34. And then when we're talking about how the city is surrounded by the south and middle forests of the Snoqualmie River, and we just say large tracts of county, state, and federal forests and parklands, as this is a document that could be viewed by anywhere from developers to other residents, then why not highlight some of the other things that we have and call out certain points of interest is my thought. So I don't know how common that would be, but I'm thinking everything from Mount Si, Little Si, Rattlesnake Lake, Rattlesnake Ridge, Twin Falls State Park Recreation Area, Camp Oskowitz, Middleport Recreation Area.
You gotta look at what the document is used for. It's not used as a tourist attraction document that you hand out. It's more of a development or design guideline. And so you're not gonna, I
appreciate that, yeah. And I agree with you. And I'm just wondering, though, and I'm not clear in what I'm conveying, right? So because we're surrounded by all these things, does it go to the fact that we might not have the residential growth, but we have the tourism growth opportunities? And that's more what does that.
And a lot of tourist traffic in the area.
Right. So even though our population isn't big, this goes to what our town is about and how we attract tourism.
So then I think there also should be some sleep around, obviously, with the truck and freight. You know, this is a pretty big area for that, obviously. And that comes in with having the other accents, but just something to acknowledge that we have tours, but also industry.
I guess my comments to kind of two points I hear you making. One, it may no longer be appropriate just to reference exit 31. I certainly understand why that was, at least the heart of the crossroads, so to speak. So maybe there's something more for. I would resist saying, let's list out the intersections. And similarly, I think if there's a sort of kind of an all-encompassing statement, which is sort of what this one is, I would lean that way versus trying to do any kind of a listing, because that's fraught with missing something, as well as, or really with needing to highlight certain people. I, for one, even having very close relationships with Camp Roskowitz, would not feel it appropriate to list it out as a specific feature in a transportation document. So that would be useful.
Maybe, I don't know what the paragraph looks like in front of us, but we can maybe just generalize in terms of the other aesthetic features we have around here that attract outside.
I support the idea that we really want to play up that we've got a fantastic natural.
Yeah, I'm good for a few pages.
somebody calls out at Fort Police, you just keep going.
So this would be, Scott, you're talking about interstate trucking, and so this would be section here. Exactly.
Bottom of page 20.
Yes.
You're just pointing it out to Scott or yet comments.
Well, my thought again was to highlight specific things about the area, so I will keep that and we'll move on.
Okay. My next comment doesn't come until 68. So.
23. So I understand when we were talking about Southeast North Bend Way and not being able to connect directly to 202.
So this is a, what, functional class?
Yes, exactly.
Figure 5.
Figure 5, yeah. Wait, page 23.
It's page 20 on the paper.
Oh, that's an
overlooked. Yes.
This is the markup, so it's...
Better off with your map, your PowerPoint.
Yeah. Yes. So it currently shows as it's a proposed collector, so downgraded from a major arterial to a proposed collector.
You're talking Southeast North Bend Way?
Yes, sir. All the way until where it looks like it intersects with 428th Avenue Southeast, so before Torgerson Park, that other proposed collector. And it looks like Southeast 108th Street is a minor arterial. And given that there's going to be the development along 428th Avenue Southeast, would it make sense to have a proposed minor arterial from Southeast 108th Street all the way to North Bend Way, which would be on 428th Avenue Southeast?
Where is 108th?
It is the green
it's
line.
6th Street.
Sixth. Here's 108th. Yeah. You're talking up here, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. 12. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
You're talking about this?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
That, I believe, is already classified as a collector.
I think it's a collector.
Or is it a minor arterial?
No, it's a collector.
But Southeast 8th is a minor arterial. And I'm thinking with the growth there, why not make that the major street then? That is going to serve all those developments. Would be wide enough.
So you're saying give this a higher classification mm-hmm. for this whole connection?
The east side of 428 is the park, correct? This is E.J. Roberts, right?
E.J. Roberts is right.
It's right in here. Oh, over here.
So that's you're talking about Thrasher right there.
Thrasher, which currently doesn't exist.
Yeah, I think part of the question would be what if it becomes sort of.
You could have two.
You see what I'm trying to do?
I guess part of the problem is that you need some continuity to the north, and. I'm not sure what you're connecting with as you go from the north, but you have to collaborate with the county about going higher.
Right. An oblong
If
108th is county or city at this point?
108th is city.
I wonder if the residents along there keep asking me when you're going to fix their road.
We know.
I keep trying to tell them it's the county.
Those are our speed dips instead of speed humps.
Traffic dips.
Well, it could be a minor arterial loop, you know, all the way around from essentially from North Bend Way around.
What's the classification of what is that that becomes 108th?
That's Ballarat there.
That's a minor.
That's a minor, right?
And these are collectors, which is one level down.
I've always wondered if Ballarat and 108 should really be a collector as opposed to an arterial, just because the volumes aren't not necessarily there to justify it being an arterial.
And you're more suggesting the other direction that the whole thing should be downgraded. Just based on
volume.
But volume isn't necessarily that great. I always like to look at are the trips shorter or longer that are using it.
They're long trips.
And they are long trips.
Yeah.
So there could be some justification for it. But,
And what I think what you're suggesting, Gary, is basically you've only got two routes out of that area.
And you want to try to protect the through movement on those routes to make sure that you don't end up with a driveway every 50 feet.
Right. Which along part would already exist.
So that's something that we can look into a little further, and maybe Ron and I can come back with a recommendation at the next meeting.
Sounds good to you, Gary.
Yeah, that sounds fine. I have to defer to your expertise.
Pickett has a lot of driveways off of it compared to 12th and Ballarat. 12th and Ballarat are fairly well controlled in terms of access to individual lots. But I think it's been sort of left uncontrolled. And keeping it probably at a lower classification would be more appropriate. Because that way you keep the speeds down.
Well, another question, though, would be whether there's an opportunity to put in a package road or alley for subsequent development.
There's not much left to be developed along Pickett.
If you get floodplain around that area as well.
The proposed plan is not going to be like this. It's going to be like collector along North Bend Way is going to stay major arterial for now along with North Bend Way. Just reading it, I can't picture that roadway as a collector. When you go into the details of what the difference between collector
and that's where I need to. Talk with Chris about North Bend Way, and I'm not sure if we should actually show it on the plan as a being collector, or proposed as a collector at this time. We're going to have to update this transportation comp plan again in the future, and maybe at that time it might be more justified, but right now we just keep the classification the way it is.
We just go back and bang it.
And I'm looking at it with the proposed growth, or what we think we know about the growth. So in 7 years, would that be a warranted major route for all the development?
That roadway is always going to serve as a connector of exactly what an arterial does. Based on where we can go, that'll always be there.
Yeah, but I think you have to, North Bend is not real big, so the trips are not necessarily very long, especially when you got the freeway parallel. And it certainly could be downgraded and if you take that chunk out of the downtown, with the downtown plaza, you know, if people want to make time, they're going to go to the freeway.
What's the benefit, I guess? I'm not sure. I mean, I know leaving it the way it is, it sounds like we get more federal grants and such. What is the benefit of changing the ventilator collector?
Well, just that for one thing, you would not want to encourage truck traffic to use it. And if you've got this sort of barrier in the downtown area, you would want to leave the arterial designation to the point where they can make a turn to get back to the freeway. And the collector designation just means you could differentiate from that point that it's, you know, more of a calm community street that might be part of neighborhoods as opposed to a hard edge. You know, it's a lower speed, lower design facility.
Can you accomplish that through truck routes and just not allow trucks to go? Or do you have to designate truck routes?
Well, that's where, you know, I think you have to decide how you want to designate them. But,
the trucks is just where you're encouraging traffic to go. More traffic for residential.
That's why I'm thinking 428 to go around the majority of the development in that section.
But I think long range, if you think about the downtown becoming the center with your plaza situation and stuff, I guess I could envision North Bend Way becoming more of a city commercial street where, you know, more of the frontage gets more commercial intensity and it becomes more of a shopping street than, you know, a place you want to go to get through in a hurry. And then, you know, if it's not an arterial anymore, you don't have to worry so much about the driveway spacing or anything else. Because you've already got the commercial zoning along there. So.
So you and Rod are going to come back with a recommendation on applications. Okay.
Next page you come.
I'm on page 32. This is in reference to the bikeways and trails system and the walkways. And question for probably Mike. Where would it be appropriate to put in a requirement for our trail system that we have, as we've named our trails, that we have some kind of identifying markers spaced at a reasonable distance on the trails that could aid rescue workers or police in an emergency?
Probably something in our best place in our parks and recreation plan.
Okay. So it wouldn't something necessarily like
it could, but it seems more as a recreational aspect than it.
Is it more about access to the recreation facilities? Is that what you're suggesting?
You're talking just like mileage markers and directional signage.
So they know, if you call them from the trail, they know where on the trail reasonably you are.
Oh, now I get it. Yeah, I misunderstood.
Am I talking to
next?
48, page 48. This would be the accident data and the collision history. And I guess congratulations to all the improvements that were done at Bendigo and Park Street that reduced the accidents to zero from 11 in 2006. But my question is, Bendigo Boulevard at Southwest Mountside Boulevard went up, and so did South Fork Avenue Southwest went up a bit. So do you think with what we're proposing in our transportation improvements with the South Fork extension that we're going to sufficiently I guess relieve some of that
it's potential. It's not going to change the accident.
No.
You actually probably increase accident potential at South Fork. Won't have any change on Outside Boulevard intersection.
I'll open it up if anybody has any thoughts or do you have any.
The main thing on Mountside Boulevard is DOT's handling of the intersection in terms of painted island versus a true raised island out there. And people trying to make left turns into the mall. Mm-hmm. And that's causing most of the accidents there. And was last year we had a fatality, I think it was. Fatality, or was it? It was a severe accident. I know it was a T-bone accident that happened there.
Oh.
And so DOT does have in their plan to put in some sort of improvement at that location, accentuating the island and trying to reduce the left turn movement capabilities. But I haven't seen much movement on it. Promised to fix some signage, but they haven't actually completed their proposed improvements to that intersection.
They'll want something soon, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of surprised the roundabout didn't show up as that empty more, just because of the unorthodox, like when you're going to get on the freeway to go eastbound. And so many people travel that inside lane not realizing that they need to traverse to the outside. And I've even gotten into that outside and they come flying across in front of you. So I'm traveling into North. I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but to me, I'm okay.
It's like a very poor design to me.
It goes back to my comment, we have very good drivers.
Yeah, we must. That one is, I've seen so many close calls on that. I've been involved in a couple of
them. My trucks and buses do that every single day that I go through.
Yeah. It's not a learning curve thing because we have so many tourists that use that intersection that it's not really familiar to me. So.
Yeah, I'm surprised there aren't more. Yeah. So.
Well, that's going to get a lot of additional traffic in 2032. I mean, that's one that did start to move into the B category, so it may be appropriate to flag it for some attention.
Maybe some additional signage that clarifies lane position or freeway on ramp.
I don't think you need one more sign to read in that.
Yeah,
there's yeah,
a sign every
day. It's
we should have a
tough sign or
actual understander. I love roundabouts. I think it works. I've been in five lane roundabouts that amaze me. I never understood them, but
that would be on the inside lane. But
inside.
It might take you a while to get out of it.
Yeah, go around
a few times.
Yeah. It's like spinning out, I mean, at a time. Anyway, Gary.
Now you're bringing hard stories back to some of the circle where I grew up that you'd have to go around sometimes because it was three freeways merging. Anyway, that's why I'm so good at it. I guess I can just take a step back, and from what I heard tonight, I'd like to make a motion that we add to our transportation improvement plan sufficient funds to permit bike lane striping on existing shoulders.
So you're onto the tip.
Kind of, but it's just more what I heard Mike discussing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm fine with that. Don't think we really need a motion for it. We're right now we're just making suggestions unless somebody's objecting to doing it.
I want to speak in favor of the task force just because from our public hearing we had some discussion on our downtown I guess pain points or traffic pain issues, but then we had a lot of participation regarding the Trucktown area, and I think whether or not it either gets handled through a task force or through a citizen committee, it should be addressed at some point, and so I just want to speak in favor that it stays as part of the plan.
So if we're moving toward the items on the improvement project list, which that's one that is on there. And I'd speak to that because I actually have the, well, I don't know that it's the opposite comment to yours because I don't have any objection to it being a task force, but it's, the more I've thought about as a line item on the TIP, the less it made sense to me. It doesn't seem appropriate to be on a, it's not a, everything else here is a hardscape improvement, and that's really a task force, and we do task forces and workshops and all kinds of things all year long that we don't call them out as funded items. And so I would ask that item number two be struck from the TIP, which is, again, not in opposition to the idea of being a task force. It's just not an appropriate item for the TIP.
So it's not a capital improvement.
Not a capital improvement. So, and there frees up $50,000 for your suggestion, so to speak. Not that there's actually any money there.
And there's our appraisal. Where else would like organized money come for like a task force? If it, like, where would you identify that or try to identify funds? Is there another more appropriate avenue or something like that, I guess, if it were to be requested?
Probably in the policies.
What did you envision when you were thinking about funding for it? I mean, beyond the city staff's
I didn't have any vision. It was basically a, if depending upon what the task force decided they do, maybe they needed a consultant to help them out for some issues. That was what it was before, to be that use the consultant if necessary.
It's similar. One of the thoughts that I had again after the last meeting, I think it'd be great for the city to sponsor, a task force. I think the citizens, of course, have every right and ability to form their own task force. They don't need to wait on the city's sponsorship. I know there was, the last meeting I attended, there were a little bit of feelings around what that task force was intended to be composed of and sponsored, So I wanted to make sure my feelings were known on it, is there's nothing holding anyone back from getting together and forming a committee to look at the issues around that. But I do think it'd be great if the city prodded other jurisdictions to get involved with helping figure it out for them.
Is the intent of the administration to do that. It's just not going to probably happen as quickly as we would like, but we've just got to keep our voice out there, and hopefully sometime it will.
So is the suggestion of the Planning Commission then, if we're removing it from the TIP list, do you want a policy added to the policy section that describes the city being involved in coordinating a task force?
Yeah, I don't know if that's the right place to put it.
I don't think that belongs in this kind of a policy document. That's just more of a statement. Mm-hmm. From either the individual commissioners or even as a whole, that we would encourage council to, do that. But it doesn't seem something that belongs in the policy document because it's a one-time event, right? I'm perfectly willing to be overruled by others.
I could see if it was a general transportation task force, but specifically label it out for the truck town, I think it should be separated. There's an overall task force to look at the transportation issues, which we've already addressed in the policies. It's questionable whether we put it in that sense. I mean, looking at the entire plant city as a versus the truck town area.
And we do have a number of other policies that do address desiring to coordinate with other agencies.
Right. And so I was just thinking myself.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that my sense is that there are probably two primary trucking areas of focus. One would be to try and sort of establish your own citywide ordinance relative to truck routes and where and how they're to be used. Well, that's more related to where there's heavy freight demand. How are you going to serve the major destinations that aren't necessarily at truck town, you know, and how are you going
within
to
the city
through trucks, right, through the city, and sort of have, excuse me, some officially designated routes and how those are to be used. That's the, sort of the citywide issue. But all the rest of it is much more focused, I think, on the exit 34 area. And the issues, I think, have been pretty well identified. And to me, it seems like those could lend themselves to a project or a package of projects that tied with the information that's been published already about the capacity issues at the truck stop, the lack of parking within the corridor generally for overnight parking for truckers, and then the emergency issues associated with what happens when the pass is closed. You know, between those things, it starts to lend itself to a grant application for a project, you know, with the Freight Mobility Investment Strategy Board and or, you know, the, you know, whatever those. So it kind of lends itself to just putting a project together or a group of projects. But I don't know that it requires an ongoing task force. I just think that there's quite a bit of information already that, that could lend itself to that.
So my only concern, I think, was for it'd be great that the city is a part owner in it now, where if they did have some funds that they could plan to set aside to help support changes in that area. That's where I think it's still proper on the TIF. Other than that, I agree with you in what you're saying, that funding the actual task force is not a place for it, but funding task force projects.
Something that resulted from the task force.
Yeah.
Sure, I could see that coming back.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if we just change the actual line item to be more project cost versus the task force cost. Is that satisfying?
But you have to identify it before you put it on there. So
yeah. I mean, there has to be a project.
Yeah, it has to be a project identified.
Along as we went to the TIP, I've got a few other items and some general questions. Was the funding, and it, I got hung up in the chapter reference, $202 as the cost. I'm assuming the cost estimate here is on 2012 or 11 dollars.
Yeah. We did that last month.
And I also mentioned in here that the TBD funds are estimated to bring in $387,000 per year. Is that a, fairly?
We're just rounding like $400,000.
Right. So I was wondering how many times over we spent that.
$400. It's going to go far.
It's going to go far, right?
It's going to go far.
And the TIB money is a 3-year update. Is that, I kind of read that in there as well. Is that the way I understand that?
No. TIB is every year.
Every year.
But it's competitive.
But it's competitive, yeah. And we're now having to compete with the big guys. Yeah. Well, actually, I take that back. It depends on what type of project that we are looking at. Pedestrian and pavement preservation projects now, I think, are shifting slightly in policy with TIB in that they're allowing cities with assessed values of what is it? What is our assessed value?
I don't know.
I can't remember. Anyway, there's a threshold that they've established. I think it's like $100 million or something like that, or $1 billion. I can't remember what the threshold is. Maybe it's $500 million. But instead of saying 5,000 people population, now they've looked at the assessed value in the cities and established a limit. And now we have falling back into the small city category being that threshold. But that only relates to pavement preservation and pedestrian improvements. When it comes to street improvements, we're still in that category with the big guys, and we have to compete for our dollars in that one. We'll most likely not get as many dollars in that area as we would like, and we'll have to really rely on the Transportation Benefit District to fund those type of projects.
So the information that I got from the finance director is that the real estate, the REIT money is about $120,000 a year, plus your Transportation Benefit District and your share of gas tax money and stuff. It's about $650,000 a year total between those, which is sort of the predictable stuff you can count on. That's...
Yeah, but REIT is not...
Not consistent.
Not consistent, and there's a lot of commitments for REIT right now. We're paying off open space purchases.
Okay.
And some other commitments right now. I mean, eventually it will become available again in the full amount, but...
The reason I was asking about the funding behind the different categories and eventually where my question was really starting to get to is each project has a proposed total cost, an estimated total cost, and some expectation of where the funding can come from. The projects are also ranked. Is that kind of the end game of where we're going versus, say, literally, you know, saying, well, we're looking to fund this one in year 2014 and these in 2015 and these in, you're not looking to name your years.
When we put the six-year TIP together, we will have to put the years down.
We'll put the years down. Okay.
This is more of a first blush for the plan to figure out all the projects we need and what priority.
Okay.
Then when we go in June to put the six-year TIP together, we have to select off the list those priorities and see if we can financially make it within the six-year period.
Okay.
And those are the ones that we stick on there.
Okay. So is what's on this, the comp plan suggested list then is not tied to the six-year horizon?
I think the first thing is that the projects that are already in the TIP are adopted essentially, right? So you've got to assume that you're going to finish off the projects that are already there and allocate some money to those. And then what comes after that is where the priorities that the plan would suggest would start to kick in.
But because we recently annexed, we're probably looking at changing the actual format or the content of the TIP from what it was last year to add or include other areas and now readjust those projects.
Yeah, so we're reprioritizing.
Reprioritize everything. Yeah. Start from scratch, basically.
Okay. I guess where my question was going, Ron, is I've been thinking of this list in terms of being the six-year horizon, and we pointed out previously, you said that projects 16 to 19 are there for long-range purposes versus being part of this. And I guess where I was feeling like, aren't there likely to be other projects of that nature? I'm not sure why these particular ones would show up on this list versus what else might be there. Or is there a way to bucket them otherwise and put them at the bottom of the list instead of within the planning horizon? I guess
those are on the bottom of the list.
Yeah, maybe it's
terms of the trend
thing that
just
the streaks.
So projects 20 on down are largely pedestrian improvement.
Yeah.
So the particular ones.
So you take the bottom half and you take the top half and you actually put them side by side.
Yeah.
Work off of both of them simultaneously.
Yeah.
Depending upon where you want to put your emphasis 1 year.
Another way of asking it would be, shouldn't they be unranked because they're not? I think you're trying to tell us that these really aren't part of the 6 year.
Tip. No, they still should be ranked.
They should be ranked.
Right.
Okay.
But the six-year TIP will say, okay, for the next 6 years, we have this pot of money that's going to be available based upon our projections of internal funding or grants or what have you. Let's pick off of these lists which projects we want to do. And then we put those together as a six-year TIP. So you want to make sure you're pulling from something that you know you want to do, and what's your highest priority project from that.
One thing that happens, I think, sometimes is that if, in fact, you have an opportunity to get a grant because one of your projects really matches up well with some funding agency's criteria, then you really want to use that steady money that you know you've got from the benefit district and others to leverage outside money so that you use your local match to grow the pot, if you will. And sometimes it'll be a project that's not your highest priority, but you can get outside money. So that's sometimes where difficult decision making comes in, because you may have to delay a project that you lose the match to that was more 100% funded.
And we've done that with projects on our six-year TIP. It might be a project, let's say there's one scheduled for this year, or for next year, there's one scheduled, and then there's another one scheduled for 3 years from now. But a grant comes along and says, oh, that one 3 years from now, hey, if we have an opportunity to get some money for that, let's plug it in and see if we can get it. And if we get the money, then that goes up to the top of the list. We can do it now and then reprioritize even our six-year TIP.
I've got a few other quick ones. Project number one, I think this is one we mentioned earlier, that was in Chris, yours, was referenced as the casino. In this one, it's also referenced as Nintendo. If we could strike that, I think the project is South Fork Extension.
We're just trying to make sure everybody understands which one it is.
I just feel that those things end up going all the way through. Yeah. Right?
That's how Jenna introduced it to me, as the Nintendo bypass.
Yeah.
Then I knew for.
I get it. Project 9, I'll just point out that's the one that we talked about earlier, and I would point out page 63 council talks about connectivity. Should they be considering not including that? Project 27 is the north side of Cedar Falls Way not in consideration just because of where it is in development?
We're using the south side because the south side shoulder is much wider.
Yeah.
So
it's a little long term. It's intended to be one side, not both.
No. Long term is intended to be both sides, but we have the opportunity right now because of the width of that shoulder to put something in right now, and do it. Sort of an opportunity factor for that roadway.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. I'm good to go.
Let me
interject a couple things here. We're going to take Project 8 out, which is North Bend Way Ballarat Signal, because if we follow all the other projects in terms of going toward the downtown plaza, we won't need number 8. So we're going to take that one out. And I'm injecting a project between 23 and 24, which would be the Orchard Sidewalk from 5th to Riverside Drive, along with the crosswalk there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which we had talked about last time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Here yet, no?
I have a question, actually. Mike, in the past we've talked about the Tanner Landing Park, and I don't know how it would be developed, and I don't know if there's any road improvements or parking that we should plan for in the transportation improvement, and I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
There is a requirement via the Tanner Landing Master Plan Overlay District that developer dedicate and construct the roadway improvements up to the trail, the Snow Falling Valley Trail. From that point forward, the road improvements would become the responsibility of King County for extending into Tanner Landing Park. So it's not something that the city would be responsible for.
I realize I do have one other question. Project 20, handrail installation. I don't understand what that is.
At the roundabout, where the pizza place was on North Side,
Ah, the fall.
Big drop-off.
Gotcha.
So it's a safety issue along that, yeah, that drop-off there.
Gotcha.
We had talked about piping and painting. You can sort of bring that back up. That was good. Is it possible, if we talk about the trail along North Bend Way, and you know, if the project is so cheap to potentially get what would be a great trail along there, could we put that in there to get the appraisal that you're saying it's a small project?
It's already in there.
It is on there?
22.
22? That's for the whole acquisition, right?
Oh. Yeah. We have to get to the acquisition first
before we get to the acquisition. So we haven't acquired any of that either.
No. We have the trail acquired from the South Fork River by the park and ride all the way through downtown to Orchard Street. But from Orchard Street going to the intersection with Suquamish Valley Trail, we don't have yet.
Is the city's intent with the downtown plan still to turn North Bend Way and Park into one-way streets?
No.
Then page 68, about halfway down the list, one-way couplet. Am I misunderstanding what that speaking to?
I just didn't get the lead in that.
Mike marking through it, I'm assuming you're saying that shouldn't be there?
Yeah.
Great. Then I don't have to raise an objection.
While we're waiting, Mr. Chair, can I make a motion?
Yeah.
I'd like to make a motion for the city to enact sufficient code changes to align with the vehicle train requirements in WAC 204-24-050 based on the public comments this evening.
Okay. Is there a second?
A second.
Okay. Discussion. Would you like to explain to me what you're recommending?
Yeah. So what we heard is that the State Patrol or WSDOT is requiring and enforcing a chain requirement on I-90, which is then having the trucks come on North Bend streets and park because they don't have chains. And so if we have the same requirement, either they're going to buy chains and carry their load where they were supposed to be going in the first place, or we're going to increase revenue for the city for the disruption they do to the roadways by their heavy loads.
So your motion is to recommend to council the adoption of that ordinance.
Yes.
Okay.
What was that number again?
WAC 204-24-050.
So I can say I personally, having just received it this evening and on what was presented, I don't feel that I've got enough information that I would support that motion myself. I don't know that's the answer. I don't know that how that really improves the situation. The trucker either has chains or doesn't have chains. It's not going to change that fact.
We don't provide the gateway for that.
Well, we are the gateway.
Well, I mean, I guess the refuge or just the... So we go and observing them, just I guess pointing to sit for a day or two till things clear up and they can get back to them. I guess we're moving.
Okay, so is the goal of that to then just push them into the next community down?
That's just going
to happen. I want a solution that makes net sense, not shoving it off on somebody else.
My point is to not have the actual street in both directions blocked like it was because they don't have chains, and they actually caused an issue which took two or three sheriff's vehicles to clear because that's what they were doing. So it's a cost constantly to the city, and why should the city taxpayers have to be paying for that bill?
Well, so what you'd be suggesting is that what the law enforcement would be doing would be handing out tickets instead of assisting the truckers to get moved.
I think it would be good to review the content of WAC 204-24050 because in here it discusses that vehicles making local deliveries may be exempt too. So.
And I'm okay because most of those would be providing a service to the city. I'm saying from what I experienced and being blocked from the interstate for hours and having to go into the wrong lane of traffic and even have trucks on the following day is not the acceptable method of mobility. If we had the same code requirements, then we would be able to either have them buy chains so they could carry across the pass and reach their destination so they wouldn't be going to the next town. If they refuse to buy the chains, then yes, they would get the ticket. But there is those sufficient resources that they could get at the exit.
Well, I thought what we heard was that the chains are available and that there was even a vendor out selling the chains. So it's not a matter of are the chains available, or does the trucker have them, or doesn't. It sounds like more of a punitive action for the truck being in our city.
Are you open to comment on this?
Not at this time. I'm not.
What may I ask a point of order? When you say if you have comments that aren't related to something that's on the agenda. So is that mean
I'm
no
I'm
comment?
Not saying it will not take comment. I'm just saying that I want to make sure that the commissioners have expressed their views, and that I will come to be sure. Thank you.
I guess I would say correct that we ought to look at how to best draft the ordinance, and that's up to the city council. I just would like to express the need for such an ordinance, and that's why I chose the term to align with, not to directly copy. I think that the exact revenue-generating opportunity for the destruction to the city streets that we're going to fund in their transportation plan, then it's an opportunity to recoup some of that for the trucks that are going to do that, for the overtime that the sheriffs that are going to have for constantly moving trucks around in those instances. I think it's a benefit. I think by requiring those trucks to have the chains in the way that they do and put up the no parking signs along Interstate 90, WashDOT or the Highway Patrol is specifically saying North Bend, enjoy these trucks.
And I guess just to kind of push it into the next city, I think, I mean, maybe initially that's what happens, but the next city will pick up, and I think, you know, there needs to be a responsibility of the truckers that travel in this area, that we do have winter seasons, that we see this every year, that they need to have these things, and we can't do it jointly with the other cities because that's not how we work. So if we do that, hopefully others will adopt the same type of policies, and then, you know, eventually, you know, they're taking responsibility for what they need to do instead of camping out. I guess that's more ongoing. So I wouldn't be initially afraid to, if the result is that, yes, they might go camp in another city, but hopefully that city will understand what's going on and put pressure on the industry to do things right. So.
Controversy. What I see here is a safety hazard, not only for pedestrian, but also getting emergency vehicles to and through that corridor. If we're going to create something, we need to address the safety issue regarding having access for our safety vehicles to even get to and from that area. If we allow this to continue, is a potential, you know, fatality, or we get a safety vehicle in there and they get boxed in, they're stuck, and then we got to get other resources in there to get the vehicles out of the way. There's really a no-win for either party. Either we force them out and the city looks bad, or we try to accommodate them, but we have to be able to recoup funds somehow, whether it be violations. I don't know. I really don't have a comment either way. It's just a tricky situation that we're in. And it's bad media for us if we push them out. You know? And then it's bad for us if we allow it to continue. So somehow we need to create something, whether it's an ordinance or not. You know, I don't know. There's no easy answer on this one.
Before we move to a vote, we get some public input. Sherwood?
So, Mr. Chair, thank you. The I didn't put it in. I didn't put it on the table for your punitive issue. If you were able to have conversations with those drivers like I did, they understand that they have to be off the interstate because that $538 ticket is the same. It's the same level of ticket as negligent driving. It fits into that category. I've talked to Washington State Patrol about this area, and they've said they don't enforce it. It's much like the law about talking on the phone. I have to stop if you're speeding or not having a taillight before I can cite you for that. What I clearly understood from having dialogue with many of the drivers was that they understand this is a safe haven, and that they can come in here and get stuck on the street or park anywhere they want. And I've got 100 of these photographs that indicate the drivers have a dialogue among themselves, I would imagine, or something like that, knowing that if they go out on the interstate, it's going to cost them money. If they come in here, the sense of collecting the citation is not as significant as given to understand that what they need to do is have the chains on board according to the Washington State law. If they anticipate traveling from 32 to 101 during the period September 1 to April 1, it's just hanging chains on the truck. And that's what it's about. The Washington State Patrol cites these drivers if there's an accident, if they slip off the road, or if they're blocking traffic. That's virtually what the soft standard is. It would seem to me that in a short period of time, writing warning tickets to get the word out, and these guys wouldn't move from 25 this way, or wouldn't move from the Port of Seattle this way, but right now they know they can come here and stack up. So, it's more about a behavioral change than a punitive issue. And in a very short period of time, the airways would carry that. And I think it would untangle a part of the Gordian knot by virtue of behavior, not about money, not about any of those things. And I do, I will tell you that it is not, my reason for bringing it up had nothing to do with dollars. It had to do with being able to eliminate one of the factors from the crisis situations that occur. The other thing, and I wish Vera was here, is that the plows couldn't go through. These trucks were in such a disarray that there was no way for a plow to even get through from 140th down to the connection, which would have allowed them to start to move trucks out. So it's not punitive, it's not a dollars and cents thing. It's a short period of punitive warning, just a warning ticket. And those guys would get the idea, and they'd be on the phone and they'd say, don't pass 32, because you have no way off. That's all. It's not about bad truck drivers, it's about bad behavior.
No, I'm very supportive of this proposal for the same reasons already discussed.
Any further discussion from the commission?
I'd just like to say, not in the motion, that I didn't have a specific dollar amount, and I would leave that up to the city council or whoever drives the ordinance.
Restate your motion to see.
For the city to enact sufficient code changes to align with vehicle chain requirements similar to WAC 204-24-050.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thanks, Dana. Did you have any further?
I'm looking left and right.
I'm surprised by the $25,000 cost to remove the plants between each side.
I pass on asking about that. We might have to come back to it when Ron comes back.
Because remember when we talked about the board, it was about $5,000 barrier, doesn't it? So I'm not quite sure what kind of
landscaping.
Well, that's always a little conservative. My next comment would be roughly in the area of page 104. It's really the appendix. It's the definition section. I just two directions in the T's. You know, we're referring in our capital improvement, we refer to TIPs and TBDs, and they're not drawn out in the definitions. And then I think it goes also to if we're if we are suggesting in the policies, policies around particular types of trucks, I'd be looking for something that told me what that truck, what that definition was. So request some drafting be done there. And then my last question is still Appendix C, but it's unnamed. It just says 6-year transportation improvement program 2003 to be replaced.
Do you have a page number? Oh,
So it's the section that basically gives the narrative description of each of the items. I'm assuming that all that's saying is this needs to be updated with the new. That's great. I'm done.
Sherwin just brought up to me ADT. It says annual daily traffic. Is that supposed to be average daily traffic? Page 99.
That's a holdover from the last plan. Interesting.
We're making improvements.
Anything else any commissioners have? All right.
So for clarification on getting these edits, if you have additional grammatical formatting edits regarding the policies, send those to me. If you've got it on anything else in the plan, send those to Chris. Chris is going to be working on that. I'll get the policies all together and then send that to Chris.
Is Chris on our emails so that we would be able to send that to Chris? Will we be submitting that to the city for forwarding?
Well, the challenge is I'm not here on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So by Thursday, we have to get the Planning Commission packets out. So if I can have you send it directly to Chris, it'd probably be a lot.
So I guess
Chris
you
will need to go through the city's website and send an email to the commissioners so that they can capture and return to you. Does that make sense? Just thinking how we
can
do it.
I could give you my email address right now, too.
That's fine.
Easy.
Go for it.
ChrisL@Certique.com.
That's pretty easy.
KRIS. L@Pertique.com.
So Chris with a K, though.
Chris with a K. That's important. Okay. We had a floodplain management plan update on the agenda. Would you like to go to there, Mike?
I want to ask Ron about that because we are out of compliance on that one.
Okay.
What do you think about floodplain management plan? It's getting late.
Up to the commission. I can say because of my focus on the transportation piece, I did not go back through the last part that I had, so, and I don't know where we are on that, where the other commissioners are. The copy I have is in redline form, so mm-hmm. I don't know if we're we don't have a black line copy.
You mean just clean without showing the edits?
Right.
No, I just gave you the red line just so you'd see all changes. I can send out a clean version if you prefer.
I'm not even suggesting it. I'm just acknowledging what I have.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me we haven't touched that for a while, and I'm wondering why we didn't move it out of Planning Commission already. Was there...
Planning Commission hasn't gone through the edits.
The final edits.
Yeah.
That would explain. Well, that's a pretty extensively edited document. So, commissioners, it's up to you. I'm guessing it's going to be some extensive time.
It's a late hour.
I'm not seeing a lot of support for going forward tonight. What's the impact, Ron, if we go another 2 weeks?
What can they do with the upper hands?
They're going to come shut us down?
No, we're actively pursuing it, so
yeah.
No, that's fine. We need to postpone it.
Okay, so we're going to table.
So again, on that one, Chapter 10 is where the majority of the edits of interest are going to be. A lot of the other edits are just simplifications, deletions.
Okay. Can I please request that that be the first agenda item at the next meeting so we get through it? Mm-hmm. And I'll entertain a motion to adjourn, or if there are other...
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question before you adjourn? Procedurally, I would like to understand how the comment activity works when you come in. You have 3 minutes to talk about something that's not on the agenda, but if it's on the agenda, you can't talk about it. Does that mean you can't talk about it? You can't make comments on it? Just procedurally, how does that work?
Yeah, I'll make sure that I brush up on it as well and ensure that I fully understand the comments. But as you know, sure, that our goal overall is to play fairly friendly on the three-minute rule and to invite comment, often throughout the meetings. About the only time I, as chair, ever really enforced the three-minute is when we've got very large turnout and a lot of people looking to speak.
I understand that. That's not my question. My question is, if the comment is about a subject that's on the agenda, does that preclude comments about that subject? How does that?
The goal would be is that if it's on the agenda, we're taking the comments during that part of the agenda, right?
And in the beginning, after, during, how does that work? I just like to know so I can time. Myself,
right.
That would be sense too.
Yep. I can say that the way that I'm proceeding is that when for instance tonight there's a motion on the table, I want to make sure that the commissioners have had their opportunity to voice comments to an active motion before we would take any action. Generally, when once you've had a motion, you need to proceed through that motion.
So if I had comments about tonight's work that was on the agenda, mm-hmm. would I be best to just submit those, right?
I would suggest
how you get the comment out.
Right, we want to make sure, that you would let us know when that item comes up that you have comments to make. And we would generally take those comments up front before we proceed. That's the general procedure, right? Take it up front.
We could also add a comment period at the end of the agenda. I think the intent of not having comments regarding an agenda item is so that you don't start going askew before the Planning Commission has had a chance to hear a presentation or gather the facts. Right. After the words, that's not as much an issue.
Quick question. I got a letter from somebody at the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency and also from somebody from the Department of Ecology in support of some of the policies I had written in the transportation plan. Do we typically put those in the record or anything like that, or are those just nice to have for me?
Sent you personally?
To my city account.
That is a public record that they've received.
So should I forward those on?
Yeah, you forward them on to the Planning Commission. Chris was suggesting it could be added as an appendix.
Yeah, certainly should be part of the public record if that's in particular, if that's what you want. But anything, I mean, as just point of law, anything that's going to you as a commissioner, whether it be the city's email address or even your personal one, is subject to open records. It's something that everyone always needs to keep in mind. Our communications are open.
Right. Yeah, ours are.
Anything else?
So if we have three?
Well, that's a quorum and we're conducting business, but if you and I are discussing city items through email, that is
Email.
Just trying to go back to that planning class.
It's been a while since I took it. It keeps evolving. Entertain a motion to adjourn?
A motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
Favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned.
I didn't want to say it was footing on foot pulses.
Well, I've been feeling so guilty with the frequency I can take. I want to go all night.
What's the next meeting in 2 weeks?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It was to be able to remove all the oxygen.
If there's any sound,
it's going to be back.